Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Makone Maje, and we are going to be diving into the news stories of today. And the first one is that the Health Ombudsman has found that Helen Joseph Hospital is, quote, not fit for purpose. There has been significant attention focused on Johannesburg's Helen Joseph Hospital ever since a social media post went viral from a former radio talk show host, Tom London, who posted a video on social media of what he called was the terrible conditions at Helen Joseph Hospital. Anyone who's been in those hospitals knows that the video he posted is really not an outlier. It was not an exaggerated depiction of events at many government hospitals, particularly Helen Joseph, that this is in many ways par for the course. The video he posted showed all sorts of terrible things, fly-ridden wards, doctors and nurses being mean or cruel to patients, dirt, dysfunction, lack of supplies, all sorts of things. Now, the Health Ombudsman has found that not all of his allegations could be substantiated, including his claim that he received poor clinical care and that doctors treated patients, quote, like cockroaches. But the complaints about poor hygiene and dilapidated infrastructure were 100% confirmed. We're talking about things like broken taps, toilets, patients not having blankets, mattresses not being cleaned, urine-soaked, fly infestations, all sorts of terrible things. It was also found that the supply chain management processes in the hospital were severely lacking. The ombudsman said the absence of a permanent CEO in the hospital has left a vacuum, leading to staff working in silos without taking accountability. There is a leadership crisis. The hospital supply chain management was lacking supervision, meant that the same person could procure services and make payments. The ombudsman said that's a polite way of saying they might be corrupted. He has recommended the Gauteng Health Department appoint an independent forensic audit firm within 2 months to conduct competency assessments of the hospital's leadership and managerial staff, appoint artisans to manage day-to-day repairs and maintenance, and fill the CEO position and key clinical posts as soon as possible. Now, Makone, this, I think, is really important in the context of the national health insurance debate. One of the claims for why we need national health insurance is that, you see, we don't have the money to run our public hospitals better, so therefore we must go and must take the money from the private health insurance industry. But I think this report nails it when it says that the problem here is management. This is not because there isn't enough money. Maybe there isn't quite enough money to do everything that needs to be done, but that's not the biggest problem. The biggest problem is that the money is being spent badly and there is just ineffective management, which is leading to huge human suffering. What's your take on this story?
My sense, Nick, is that there would be enough money if so much of it wasn't going towards corrupt schemes that Helen Joseph Hospital is not the only victim of. We got to learn of the Tembisa Hospital, and it's similarly riddled corrupt supply chain and procurement processes, where I think Jeff Wicks even mentioned that the corruption was occurring so blatantly that the company registration numbers were almost sequential. These are companies that money was being funneled through, these other companies that were procuring expensive children's skinny jeans and V-neck jerseys for hospital staff to the tune of 10,000 rands and more. So I'm to the ombudsman, I think there's no need. I detest that in South Africa we tend to use with euphemisms to cover up rot and corruption in state enterprises, you know, or even try to make things look not as bad, like official versus expanded definition of unemployment or lack of processes and oversight. No, it's people stealing, it's people looting, it's people plundering the public purse where lives are literally at stake, such as at public health facilities. So you are right to call out Dr. Motsoaledi, who usually likes to put this blame, right, that people do not support the NHI on. He claims it's just people, rich people who have access to private healthcare. But it's everyone who does not want to see the side of public of healthcare in South Africa that's done so well derailed that it needs to be protected from the hands of the state. It's not just people with medical aids or just rich people. I mean, Tom London surely he went to a public facility for a reason because he couldn't afford it. And yet he ended up having to make ends meet and go get the healthcare that he needed. So I find it appalling and detestable that whenever the NHI is spoken of, the narrative is always to pin the rich against the poor, as if that's where the battle is. No, the battle is for everyone in South Africa to get quality to good healthcare, even and especially at health facilities, because that's where most people go. But that we should pour more money into a black hole so that it's looted some more, I don't think that's the solution. So yeah, this is no surprise. And I'm sure that if more investigations were done across public health facilities, we would find that tens of thousands more are in the same condition, if not worse, than Helen Joseph and the Tembisa Hospital.
No, I think that's exactly right. The healthcare system in South Africa, the public healthcare system, does not deserve our trust. It abuses far too many people. It lets far too many people die who should have lived or received poor care. And until that trust deficit is fixed, we can't even begin to argue the merits of NHI, because it is fantasy, the idea that government will manage all healthcare spending in the country. All right, let's go on to what was a little bit of a social media kerfuffle. This was because Sports, Arts and Culture Minister Gayton McKenzie was attacked by people on social media because he had advertised a position for Deputy Director of Administrative Support and Coordination in his office. And this stated in the advert that preference would be given to, quote, colored males, Indian males, white males, colored females and Indian females. McKenzie pushed back on the backlash, saying that this was all just in line with employment equity. He said, quote, employment equity, are you saying you've never heard of it? We are making sure all races are represented. There's nothing to be alarmed about. Salute. I am for all races. When I find other races being ignored and really given job opportunities, it is my duty to fix it. I'm fixing things. I want all races to be represented in the department I leave. Go boil somewhere else. He said, out of the 586 staff in the department, 531 are African, 19 are colored, 4 are Indian, and 32 are white. I can never lead a department that is so underrepresentative of society. I'm being accused of racism by people who need to look in the mirror. McCorne, you know, this just strikes me of how silly all of these kind of race quota things get in the end. Is it always devolved into this kind of zero-sum game of trying to social engineer society so that this group gets this much of the pie and this group gets this much of the pie? It's all wrong. You should be appointing people who can do the job the best, regardless of their gender, of their color, their sexual orientation, whatever. And I think this is just another example of how, you know, this doesn't make anyone happy ever.
It is so dumb, and it would be a wonderful troll. I would find this chef's kiss of a troll if it weren't for the fact that I know that McKenzie ran on a ticket of representing colored people, and perhaps that's why there's an emphasis to make sure that coloreds are included in his department, although he mentions other races. I do know that the PA always goes back to its constituencies and them being mostly made up of colored people. But it's besides the point, Mr. McKenzie, that this is in compliance with the equity targets, this treating of people like cattle that need to be sorted into these different slots to ensure that there's equitable representation. What we need are people who are qualified. That's finished, plain and simple. We don't need people to be rationed by the state. What about black qualified people? Should they be excluded because they're overly... Imagine if that was the litmus test in an arts and culture event like sports, like running. Imagine if we needed to make sure that there was representation of all these different races before we headed to the Olympics. We would simply not win. We would come back every day or every other sporting activity defeated by countries like Kenya who do not care who represent what color person represents them. All they care about is that you can finish faster than Usain Bolt in Usain Bolt's event. So Yeah, I think McKinsey knows how silly this is, but I think he's playing politics here.
Yeah, no, just disappointing to see. And I think this was a great opportunity to kind of push back and say, at the very least, look, I have to do this because of the law, I guess he could say, but it's bad and it's stupid and I don't want to do it. And, you know, as has been pointed out by the American economist Thomas Sowell, you can never, ever achieve the perfect representativity in any sphere of society you look at. There's always going to be these sort of distortions and this group over here overrepresented and this group underrepresented. What we need to do is focus on making sure that there are lots of opportunities for everyone to be able to have a stake in the economy and for government to function properly by having the best people in the job. All right. Our last point for today is that the Electoral Commission of South Africa, the IEC, is hosting a conference in Cape Town this week to discuss the possibility of switching the country to electronic voting. Minister of Home Affairs Leon Schreiber has sort of pushed back against this, saying that any consideration to introduce electronic voting must enhance both the voting process and experience. He said, quote, "There is nothing more dangerous, frankly, for our elections and by extension our democracy than voters who turn away from a voting booth, than voters who lose confidence in the system through which they are supposed to govern the country in which they live. And that is why we must make sure we keep those end users, the people, first, even as we embrace technology." He said that there's no point in embracing a digital system if it turns out just to be as slow and as useless as a paper-based system. He said, quote, "The truth is, much as technology may be impressive, the digitization of government is not an end in of itself. It's a means towards delivering better services, enhancing security, and ensuring the user of any specified service walks away satisfied." McCorner, I completely agree with that sentiment, and I am opposed to electronic voting, not because I think that it is massively in danger of being, you know, sort of hacked or manipulated. I mean, that's always a consideration. But because if you look at how our last election was run and how poorly it did, particularly the electronic stuff, this is a recipe for chaos and disaster. Let's just stick with the paper ballots and save ourselves all the headache of having to redo elections all over the place, because I can just see this turning into a disaster. Am I being too cynical and negative?
No, in fact, I can share that I got to observe the elections in the previous national election, and I got to go to the Alexandra High School, where voting was boycotted there because the only machine that was working was getting voters in and out of there so quickly that the rest of the machines that weren't working kept people in the queue for hours. And so it became unfair that certain people who were assigned to the machine that was working under like certain surnames, like from M to P, let's say, would come in and out quickly, while all the A to L's had been there all day because their machine's not working. It would create chaos, like you said. And it did at the school. People boycotted the whole thing and said, everyone should join in one queue. Screw efficiency, screw effectiveness, screw the group of people by surname, because it's clear those who just happen to be by the station where all the voting, yeah, rotation where the air machine works. And what also ended up happening is these machines were supposed to verify whether you are indeed supposed to vote at that voting center, right? So people would come from all over. Maybe you had deregistered for where you now live and registered elsewhere, and people would come from all over to come and verify their registration status in that area. And it's very possible that if these machines do not work, you have to be turned away, which does not make voting more accessible. It makes it less accessible. And so we have bigger fish to fry. South Africa tends to be that country that loves to live beyond its means and demonstrate, you know, advancement and all these nice luxuries that first world countries can afford. We're just not there yet. Our government cannot run an election well, and these electronic voting devices would certainly expose that, and we should not test that when it comes to voting.
Indeed. And then, you know, this is once again a case of, we can't even begin to talk about the merits of this decision because we can't do the basics right. So let's make sure that voting is efficient, that it runs quickly and properly, that people don't have to wait in queues. I mean, you know, my voting station was also a bit of a complete disaster last time. So, yeah, it would be nice if that worked first. then we can argue about whether this is actually safe or not to prevent fraud and all these other things. But the paper system is what we know. It's what most of the people are trained on. It's got fewer failure points. And that's definitely, I think, the way we should stick to at the moment. Okay, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting. And that's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.